Many innovations for the agriculture industry show promise in the lab and controlled small plot settings, but fall short when it comes to capturing complete data from the field. From the start, Intent built its business on bringing efficiency and effectiveness to field trials, helping clients reach their business goals. Since then, Intent has unveiled its InVision software, which works in conjunction with Intent's Farmer Trials network of more than 1,500 growers to maximize data collection and quality. Today, Intent's sole focus remains the same, to equip agribusiness with better data. But the manner in which Intent is able to collect, interpret, and model that data is light years ahead of what was previously thought possible. To learn more about Intent, visit intent.ag. That's Intent, I-N-T-E-N-T, .ag. Welcome to North American Ag Spotlight. I'm Chrissy Wozniak. My guests today are two distinguished guests today. I'll start with Dr. Frank Wong. He is the U.S. Industry Affairs Lead for Bayer Crop Science based in Raleigh, North Carolina, and he has over 25 years of experience in plant protection and works with a broad range of stakeholders to find solutions for regulatory and policy issues for row crop, specialty ag, and non-ag industries. Frank is active across the crop protection industry and serves on a number of work groups and committees in support of Bayer Responsible Industry for Sound Environment, Crop Life of America, and the Federal Endangered Species Task Force, in addition to the Growing Matters Coalition. And also with us today is Nick Tinsley. He's a seed treatment technical field representative with BASF, covering the Eastern Corn Belt. He has a responsibility for research and development activities and customer support related to BASF's seed treatment portfolio. Nick received his BE, Bachelor of Science, Master of Science, and PhD from the University of Illinois and has 17 years of experience in agriculture. So thank you. Welcome. And thank you both for joining me today. I think it'll be a great discussion.
Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Awesome. So we're going to talk about Growing Matters and the BeSure program. So can we first off start just by telling me a bit about your backgrounds, each of you?
Sure, I can take a stab first. So the name's Nick Tinsley, and you did a great introduction there at the high points. I will say I was kind of trained as an agricultural entomologist. And so that's just kind of a fancy way of saying that, I study and work with insects that affect crops. And so I'm based out of the Midwest. And work really in corn, soybeans, and wheat on those insects, and more recently, some other aspects of crop management, like diseases and nematodes as well. So that's kind of where I come from, Chrissy.
Great. And Dr. Wong?
Oh, Frank is fine. Dr. Wong makes me sound like James Bond villain. So. Yeah, so you actually get another ag pest management specialist or discipline. So I am a trained plant pathologist. So unlike Nick, who got to look at cool insects, I got to look at moldy plants all day long for my PhD. So I've been a practicing plant pathologist for many years. I was a statewide extension at University of California, and I've always been kind of more oriented towards the fruit and vegetable space, especially crops, and even did quite a significant amount of work in the golf course and sports turf area. So I've seen a lot of different issues with crop and non-crop pest management. So happy to be here.
Amazing. So tell me about Growing Matters and the BeSure campaign.
Yeah, I'd be happy to kind of take that one. So the BeSure campaign is really this awesome initiative. It's essentially a public awareness campaign to really make the public and growers specifically aware of the stewardship aspects of using what we call neonicotinoid products. And so these could be things like seed treatments or foliar sprays that we use on the farm, like Frank said, in golf courses or even around the house. And we know that it's important to use those products in a way that's safe and effective. So we know that growers rely on these. Everyone really does. And so using them with good stewardship practices can really make sure that they're here for a long time for them to use. And it's really a coalition from the Growing Matters group. And this is a lot of basic manufacturers. So companies like mine and Frank's, so BASF and Bayer, as well as some others that have kind of gotten together to help spread the message. And we're also backed by, you know, commodity organizations, things like the American Soybean Association, National Corn Growers Association, American Seed Trade Association. So I think everyone who's kind of involved with these types of products knows how important they are and have come together for this awareness campaign.
Yeah, and I like how it's a lot of united voices who are very deeply entrenched in the industry. So it's not like somebody above just talking at farmers. I like that it's a united voice that's actually trying to lift up farmers, right?
Yeah, yeah. We all have a stake mm-hmm. in this, for sure.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Yeah. And so, you know, in my opinion, producers are the best stewards of the land. I know it can be, there's a lot of trendy words and, you know, people are sick of hearing a lot of the sustainability and all of that, I think at this point, but it is important to be good stewards of the earth. And so why is it so important to, in your opinion, to practice these proper stewardship practices?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question, Chrissy. You know, again, I was joking about it earlier, you know, whether it's insects or fungi, nematodes or weeds, you know, there's all kinds of creatures out there that are totally happy, you know, impacting crops and reducing your yield and causing problems, all kinds of problems, right? So, you know, definitely crop protection tools are needed and there's a myriad of them. But, you know, for sure, you know, insecticides are one of those tools. But, you know, as with any tool, using it correctly and using it responsibly is a big part of that agreement, right? And so, you know, you would never give an unlicensed driver or somebody who's never driven a car before just, you know, freedom just to do whatever they want to do, right? And so a lot of that holds true with crop protection chemistries and, you know, insecticides like that farmers use for protecting their crops. So, you know, stewardship is really about following the label, doing the right thing, and protecting non-targets from any potential effects. And again, you know, farmers do an incredibly good job as far as, you know, using those tools properly. But again, it's just a reminder that, you know, don't take it lightly as far as not following the label. You know, use all the information on the label, follow the instructions, you know, stay within the letter of the law as far as, you know, making your applications. And you know, I know, you know, life can get a little crazy. Don't cut corners. You know, there is a definite responsibility for using these kinds of tools. And, you know, especially with you know, the public, you know, the public can be really touchy. And, you know, what is it, the numbers are, you know, roughly about, you know, only one out of, you know, every 100, you know, citizens in the U.S. here is actually, you know, related to farming or rural communities. So again, there's just a lot of misunderstanding about crop protection chemistry. So, you know, in order to really show our responsible use and that these tools are being used in a, you know, safe, responsible manner, following the label and practicing good stewardship is just really essential for keeping these tools available that are needed every day to protect our crops against pests.
Yeah, that's a great explanation. And so specifically, what are some quick reminders that applicators can follow for treated seed?
Yeah, treated seed is really an excellent tool. If you think about it, maybe some folks aren't familiar. So essentially, a treated seed is you apply the crop protection product to the seed before it's even planted. And so it protects that seed as it's in the ground. And then once that seedling germinates and begins to grow, that plant takes up those crop protection chemistries like neonicotinoids and helps protect it against like insect attack. So really valuable tool. And there's a number of things we can do to make sure that they're used in a responsible way. So for example, one thing a grower might consider is using a polymer with those seed treatments or the proper seed flow lubricants. And so you don't want to have a situation where you've got dust being created that can settle into areas where we might not want that. And so that's definitely something to consider. Something else is that, you know, this seed is pretty expensive when growers purchase it. And so, you don't want to leave it sitting on the ground if you happen to spill it, right? It represents a pretty significant investment for that grower. And so anytime you have seed on the ground, it's important to collect it up, put it back in the original container, or, you know, alternatively, if it's just a small amount, you can bury it under the soil. So these are some ways that I think growers can really tackle using treated seeds in a responsible way and continue to have that technology available to help protect against things like insects and other pathogens and diseases as well. So,
yeah. And then what about any tips for foliar applications?
Wow. Yeah. You know, definitely with foliar applications, I think, you know, again, there are going to be specific instructions on the label with regard to, you know, application instructions, you know, things you have to watch for as far as nozzle selection, you know, watch out for wind speed, so on and so forth, buffers. So, you know, again, paying attention to all of those details on the label is really, really important. You know, again, I'm going to sound like that naggy dad, but, you know, it's just really important. And, you know, most of all, I think one thing that we want to make sure is that, you know, if you see foraging pollinators, if you see active pollinators, you know, insecticides are going to impact them. So especially with the foliar application. So just be aware of their presence and avoid application directly to those foraging pollinators, especially with neonicotinoids.
Yeah, that makes sense. And what should farmers do with their leftover or their unused treated seed? Is there a way to dispose of them?
Yeah. That's another fantastic question. You know, every year we try to order the exact amount of seed that we're going to need for our acres, but inevitably you are going to have some leftover. And so you can have, if it's a small amount, you know, we also get weather conditions each year where maybe a portion of the field gets drowned out and you might have to replant. Using some of that treated seed in those replant situations is a great opportunity to kind of dispose of it in a way that will also produce a harvest for those growers. So that's one method. Anytime you've got a large amount of treated seed, you know, that's a lot to deal with. And so there are companies out there and avenues for getting rid of and disposing of that in a responsible and safe way. And so I typically recommend that growers reach out to maybe their local extension office or even the state or local departments of agriculture. These are great resources and they can help get people linked up with the proper disposal technique. So that's a very important aspect of this.
Right. Yeah. And I've seen over the years, I'm originally from Canada, and the neonic debate happened 10 years ago. We were kind of going through this. And what happened is a lot of the lobbyists came out and ended up banning it. And I think it's important that we are educating lawmakers as well as consumers about these issues where these treated seeds are actually reducing, you know, the once they were banned, now more harmful, less targeted solutions had to be used. So how are you guys making strides to try to push that education so that the same thing doesn't happen?
Yeah.
No, go ahead, Frank. Yeah.
Thank you, Nick. You know, for sure, you know, educating the public is a high priority. And I think that's one of the benefits of having the Growing Matters Coalition. It's a unified voice as far as bringing public education, you know, advocating for stewardship and the continued use of these tools. If you go to the Growing Matters website, there's a lot of information there about, you know, why growers and farmers need these kinds of technologies. There are significant, you know, economic impacts, positive economic impacts on the agricultural community from the use of these. And, you know, like you mentioned, Chrissy, you know, there's some really great cautionary tales as far as, you know, sometimes legislation getting ahead of the science. And at the end of the day, the farming community pays the price as far as not having tools to be able to use for the control of insect pests. Again, you know, it's an uphill battle. I think sometimes the, I would say, legislators are making decisions not necessarily based on the full facts or you know, just not understanding fully the science and the benefits versus the risks of crop protection chemistry. So again, all I can say is You know, we just as a industry continue to need to show that we can use these materials properly and use them responsibly. Because again, if you know some, you know, nobody ever congratulates you for doing the right thing. But as soon as you do the wrong thing, you know, 100 people jump on your back. And so, again, it's just really important that you know, the end users, you know, practice good stewardship and best management practices as far as using these tools properly.
Yeah, great points. And I think it would be helpful if everyone, before they could comment, had to grow a tomato plant or a cucumber or squash and see how everything else wants to eat it too. It's like raising chickens. Everything wants to eat the chickens, not just us, right? So we're so far removed from farming that, you know, it's nearly impossible to grow anything without some human intervention, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say, if we had to grow tomatoes as our test for working in this industry, I might actually fail. If it was corn or soybean, I might be okay. But that's a great point, Chrissy. Yeah.
Yeah. And Chrissy, every year, I know there's a book about this, but you know, every year we try growing tomatoes in our front yard, and the estimated, you know, cost of each tomato is about $82, you know.
Oh, that's hilarious. as an avid gardener, I can definitely agree with that. So what do you recommend producers do to try to make an impact in this area? Should they be calling their representatives? Should they be, is there a place that they can be aware of maybe, you know, bills that are coming out or anything like that?
Yeah. So this is a great question. First and foremost, these are the end users of these products. And so they carry that burden on their shoulders whenever they go out to their fields to affect one of these management sprays or apply treated seed. And so, again, just want to reiterate how important it is to make sure you're following everything you can on those labels. And I would mention for treated seed, there's kind of a special type of label that, you know, is applied to the container that seed comes in. It's called the seed tag. And it contains a lot of that language about stewardship on there as well. And so sometimes it's called a seed tag and it's different than a label, but it's important to take a look at that. In terms of getting involved, you know, I think there's myriad ways that growers can kind of reach out and see how they might be able to help spread the message. And certainly there are many organizations like Growing Matters that, you know, have great websites that can direct people to how they can best spend their time in that area if they do want to get involved in things like advocacy.
Yeah, great points. Yeah, go ahead.
Chrissy, I'm just going to put a plug in for the national and the state grower organizations, grower and other ag industry associations. You know, we have the pleasure of working with a number of them, you know, range from like the National Association of Wheat Growers to American Soybean Association, National Corn Growers Association, you know, so on and so forth. And you know, with those national groups, there's also state groups, you know, so like the Illinois Soybean Association, you know, whatever, you know, so on and so forth. And really, again, you know, growers and farmers have got, you know, a million other things to worry about. And one of the benefits of being part of a national or state organization is that when there are things like legislation or regulatory issues that pop up that impact the tools that you need, they often send out member alerts and action alerts. And, you know, sometimes a letter to your state or federal pesticide regulators, you know, is what's needed. Sometimes you need folks to go up to the Capitol and just tell legislators about, you know, what you do and why certain things are important to you. And again, you know, there's a famous saying in DC, you know, either you're at the table or you're on the menu, right? And it's a great saying, because, you know, it's amazing how if you don't show up, there are plenty of people who know nothing about what you do who are perfectly willing to tell your story for you, you know, and I think that's something that, again, a lot of the member or, you know, grower groups and organizations, you know, I know that sometimes, you know, membership is like, you know, it's not always a, you know, something that seems important, but you know, being a member of those national and state grower organizations is really helpful in that context.
Yeah, good point. And another thing to keep in mind is that crop protection methods, treatments don't just happen overnight. There's years and years of science and testing, and then going through EPA and getting, you know, it's not like it's just, here's a new product and it's just brand new, right? Mm-hmm. Can you outline a bit of that, you know, about of that timeline?
Nick, this is kind of, you know, the bread and butter stuff.
Go ahead. I love hearing it.
You know, on average, I think, you know, you're talking about, you know, like the, you know, $400 million range there as far as developing a new chemical. And, you know, it could take up to 10 years to get registered. So, you know, back in the day when I was still a postdoc, I remember the figure was like, you know, if you could find one new, you know, chemistry in a pool of 200,000, you know, it was a great year. And I think it's probably gotten even more stringent as far as finding things that are effective, that are new, that have, you know, a really good ecological profile and non-target effects. You know, or lack non-target effects. Again, you know, it's almost kind of like, you know, finding a needle in a haystack these days. So definitely not only with the cost and time of things that it takes to register them at the federal and state level, but, you know, it's really hard to find these molecules. So let's not take what we have for granted as far as not stewarding them.
Yeah. And I'd just add, you know, for some context from myself, we tend to think about companies like Bayer or BASF as these large, almost faceless companies. And I can tell you, you know, in my role to help develop these chemistries that folks use, it's intensely personal. And we have tremendous investment and passion around bringing the next tool to market that can help growers' lives easier and help make those calories more available to a food insecure world. This is why we, you know, folks like Frank and I get up in the morning. And so we very much are invested in making sure that these products, once we bring them to market, are there for a long time for growers to use. So just to kind of personalize that a little bit on my side.
Right. And that's a perfect segue into my very last question. What are you the most passionate about in what each of you do?
Yeah, I'll take the first step. I really have two passions, and it comes back to this notion of that a lot of my job is research and development, and some of it is customer support. So exactly, when I am able to kind of identify a new chemistry that can help make a difference in terms of a farmer's operation, that is really important. And it's kind of the reason that we get up and go to work every morning. And just knowing that a grower might be having an issue that we have a solution for is truly rewarding. You know, agriculture, I think, has always been a great industry to be in. I wish more folks would get involved with it, especially from diverse backgrounds. I think it's so rewarding in that way. And then, you know, from the research side, it's every day I learn something new. It is so incredible. And being able to share that with folks is just the passion and the reason for doing it.
Right. And Frank?
You know, I'm going to sound really dumb when I say this compared to what Nick just said, but I'm doing it for the donuts. in all seriousness, I grew up in Fresno, California. So that's, you know, like the fruit and vegetable basket of the world, right? And, you know, you've got, you know, fields and orchards around you. And, you know, coming from a Chinese American family that's always been passionate about, you know, food and culture, you know, a big part of the family was in the restaurant business, the grocery business. And, you know, you need what? You need water, oxygen, and food to survive, right? And so that's always been something that has been a big passion, you know, is feeding the world and providing sustenance to, you know, our society, right? And I think, you know, supporting the farmers and the people who actually provide those, you know, the food, you know, food, fiber, fruits and vegetables, everything, you know, that our society needs is a, you know, incredibly wonderful job. You know, and that led me to a career in extension before joining Bayer, you know, helping out the people who really support and are the pillars of society. That's what keeps me going. So, but you know, again, I do enjoy the donuts. So
amazing. I love it. So tell me again where people can find you.
Yeah. So anyone interested in learning more about this stewardship, this Be Sure stewardship campaign should visit growingmatters.org/be sure. That's BESURE.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much to both of you for joining me. Great conversation.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Chrissy.
And thanks to all who are watching or listening. If you want to learn more, all the links are provided in the show notes. And don't forget to subscribe to North American Ag Spotlight on Rumble, Telegram, Apple, Amazon, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Have a great day. Thanks so much for listening to today's Ag Spotlight episode, where we put the spotlight on people and companies doing great things for the agricultural industry. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Amazon, Spotify, Stitcher, or on your favorite podcasting platform, and give us a 5-star review. You can also follow us on YouTube and Rumble to see the video version of Ag Spotlight. Also, head on over to northamericanag.com to subscribe to our Industry Connect update newsletter. If you're interested in advertising opportunities, email us at connect@northamericanag.com. Thanks for listening. Fastline Auctions, the ultimate destination for online farm equipment auctions. Looking to list equipment? Fastline Auctions knows farmers, and farmers have trusted Fastline for their equipment needs for over 45 years. With unmatched digital reach and direct-to-farmer catalogs, they can find the right buyer for your equipment. Not to mention, they have the industry's lowest commission rates. And if you're looking for equipment to buy, you can bid with confidence. No buyer premiums, no reserves, just integrity. Fastline Auctions, your trusted platform for hassle-free, cost-effective farm equipment auctions. Visit fastline.com for more information. You can join us for a tour of the Fastline Auctions platform July 13th at 6:30 p.m. To register for this webinar, go to northamericanag.com/fastline-webinar. That's northamericanag.com/fastline-webinar to register now.